Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Samach Vav and Aleph, 12 lines down. The Gemara here is continuing to discuss the matter of Ed Echad Ne'eman. Where does an Ed Echad have Ne'emanut? Already yesterday we discussed the issue with regards to Isurim, and again we saw the two major opinions within the Rishonim, that as to whether an Ed Echad Ne'eman B'Isurim derives from his actual Ne'emanut, that he has a believability in Midin HaTorah, the Ramban, and others that learn that way, versus the Baalei Tosafot, who say that the Ed Echad by himself is meaningless. It's only because you have the Shtika Kehoda'ah. It's because you have the silence here, which is acquiescence, that is what drives the Ne'emanut of the Ed Echad, and that's what makes them Ne'eman. Without the Baalim, it wouldn't work. This Gemara, again, yesterday's Gemara, seems highly supportive of that position of the Tosafot. The Ramban and others have to answer that there are different types of silence, and the Gemara here is pointing out that certain silence is rejection, sometimes silence is an acquiescence, and the silence here we read or interpret as being acquiescence rather than simply a rejection or dismissal of what that which the Ed Echad says. So now we shift the discussion to Ed Echad in a different context, which is Ibailu. Ishto zinta be'ed Echad v'shutek mahu. If you have an individual whose wife was mizana, but we only have one Ed Echad, and the Baal, the husband over here, when told about this, is silenced. So the question again here, that silence, is that silence acquiescence? Is that silence corroboration? Or is that silence in some sense a rejection or a non-acceptance of what happens? Beyond that, does it even matter that an Ed Echad testifies over here in this case? The major issue being, and we'll see this in a second, is that we already know that from the Gemara and Sota, that the requirements for labeling a woman as a mizana or as a sota requires kinoi vistira, requires two edim in those cases. One aid is not sufficient. One aid is sufficient to stop her from drinking, but it's still not enough to incriminate her. Yet over here, Amar Abayi Ne'eman, he's believed. Rava Amar Einu Ne'eman, he is not believed. Rava has a very simple reasoning. Abi Dava Shebe'erva. This is dealing with Arayot. V'in Dava Shebe'erva Pachot Mishnayim. Whenever you deal with Davar Shereva, you can't have less than two witnesses here, and this is less than two witnesses. Tosafot already raises the issue with regards to Abaye. What are we going to do with Abaye? I mean, it's one thing that we've seen that Ed Echad's Ne'eman B'Isurim, but over here we know it's dealing with Arayot, so why isn't there a requirement of two Edim? So Tosafot brings different possibilities. One possibility, he says, is by the case of Kiddushin, he agrees that there is a requirement of two edim. So even though by Kiddushin we require two edim and Ed Echad is not enough, over here Ed Echad will be enough. The reason being, because by the case of Kiddushin you need Ede Kiyum. You need the two edim, not again because of believability, but simply as a Kiyum for the Kinyan Kiddushin. And if you don't have two edim, it doesn't work. And what we're going to assume then is that the Ma'ot Matana, that the money was given as a gift and wasn't given for Kiddushin because there weren't two Eidim there, and therefore it's not Kiddushin. Over here, whether the Eid is there or not doesn't change the fact. The fact is that this woman had an extramarital affair. If she had an extramarital affair, whether it's one Eid or two Eidim that are testifying to that shouldn't make a difference. And that's why the Bia Zoseret, the Bia makes her Asura no matter what. So Abaye is saying that he's Ne'eman over here is not that we're going to punish her, we're going to put her to death, but simply he's believed enough that the husband can no longer be together with his wife, that she is a surah to the husband. And Tosafot notes the difference, which is the facts don't change. The fact that she had bi'ah with someone else doesn't change whether it's one eid or two eidim. It might change if you have one eid or two eidim, what the punishments might be, what might be the ramifications of that. But they won't change the fact that it was a bi'ah over here. On the other hand, by Kiddushin, it does change the facts, which is that if you have two Eidim there, you have a Kinyan Kiddushin, and you have Eidei Kiyum. If you have one Eid there, then we'll just deem it to be a Matana. That's one way that Tosafot deals with it. The second way that Tosafot deals with it is to say that Abaye really holds, like those positions before that said Ed Echad works by Kiddushin. We saw Rav Papa and Rav Kahana argue about that, and there were Deot that held like Rav Papa. And so Abaye holds like Rav Papa that Ed Echad is Ne'eman enough to create Kiddushin. If you can create Kiddushin, you can also be Ne'eman in this case. Meaning that they have a different view with regards to Ed Echad in these situations. The third way that Tosafot deals with over here, he says, V'esh lamar, the hotomayri be'enu shotek, ababu shotek, Ed Echad me'emen. that the possibility also over there is that in the case in Sota, is a case where the Baalim reject it. Like you said, either he says, I don't know, according to the Baalei Tosafot, or he says, no, I don't think it happened. In that case, you need two Edim. Otherwise, it won't matter. Over here, where he's silent, maybe Abaye says, it works. The last possibility is to suggest here that this is all working midrabanan. There is no ne'amanut, you can't be oser. But midrabanan, they were machmir in this case, by an erechad, by a case of a quote-unquote sota, or isha mizana, that they would make her asura lebala. Those are four different ways to deal with this shita of Abaye, despite the fact that we say that there generally, dvarim she'erva require two. For Rova, Tosafot asks here, according to Tosafot Shita, that when you have an Eid Echad and Shtik of the Baal, Shtik is Geoda, and that's what drives the Nemanut. So according to that, why isn't the Eid Echad Neman here when the Baalimar should take? Because the Tosafot, the Shita To, should give Nemanut to the Eid Echad. So Tosafot says that the Shtik over here is different, which is that Rova doesn't believe that Shtik of Geoda is what's the driving force here, but rather, Shtika is Raglaim Ledavar, circumstantial evidence. And so therefore, in certain cases or contexts, the shtika will be considered as if it was circumstantial evidence or corroboration of what the aid says. In other cases, like over here, we will say that the davar shebe'erva, his silence, we don't deem as being circumstantial evidence, but rather simply as not responding. And because of that, we won't believe him, or the aid echad will lose his nemanut over here. Alright, I'm Rabbi Mina, I mean a lot, but I will assure that this is the case. Though Samya, Tava Mesader Matnita Kamei de Mar Shmuel, used to read off the Mishnayot before Mar Shmuel, and he knew the Mishnayot by heart, and he used to review them before Shmuel, and they used to chazer that way. Yom Echad Nogale, one day he delayed, he tarried. Lo Vagate, he wasn't coming. Shodar Shlicha Batrei, Shmuel sent a Shliach to go get him, you know, to bring him to the Beit Midrash. So the shliach went one way to go get him, and in the meantime, he entered the Beit Midrash, he came in another way, so they missed each other. When the messenger returned, Amar Ishto Zinta, that your wife just had an extramarital affair. And that the shliach gets to his house to go get him, he's already left the house, and is now by the Beit Midrash. And the shliach says, you know what, I saw when I got there that your wife was consorting with someone else. After the coming to Mar Shmuel, so he came before Mar Shmuel and said, what should I do about this? I'm like, im hemen lach, zilafko. If he is trustworthy to you, if you believe the Zayd Echad, then go release her, meaning that divorce her. Filo, lo tepik. If you don't believe him, then don't. My laugh, what is he saying to him? Im hemen alecha, delavka zlanu. What is he saying? Meaning that, is he believed to you that he's not a thief? So now, what that has to do with our case at all is not clear. What I would suggest is that a gazlan is the quintessential midoraita psul of edut. In that the Parshat Mishpatim, which discusses that psul edut, talks about a person who has ed chamas, someone who is a thief, or someone who steals. And since they steal, they're a psul edut. So his question to him is, im emen alecha delav gazlanu. Does he work like a regular aide for you? Do you believe that he is a good aide? That's one way to formulate it. Others simply say, do you believe that he is testifying versus just giving you a hard time or trying to cause you difficulty? So that's the question of Gazlano. Do you think he's just trying to play games with you, or do you really believe that he's giving edut over here? But either way, what you're seeing from this and what Abaye is trying to prove from this is that once you have Nemanut, or the aide has Nemanut, then we're talking about a dut that works, and you divorce his wife based on that, because with Eid Echad is Naaman. Interesting enough, here he does not respond. In all likelihood, it's Enu Yodea, that he really doesn't know about it, because he's getting the information now. But he doesn't say Enu Yodea, he simply is silent. So his silence plus the Eid Echad, Abaye says, I'm showing you that you see that it works, that when Ishto Zinta, that's sufficient. Rava says, no. What does it mean? Imahem lecha kebetrei. If he will leave him like two, zilafka, then you should divorce her. Ilo, lo tafka. If not, you shouldn't divorce her, you shouldn't release her. Meaning that we have sometimes, or situations or circumstances in which people will accept a single aid as having the power of two aidim. We find other examples of that in Shas. And so he's asking him here, as an aid achad, it won't suffice, according to Rava. But if you look at him, or you trust him like two Edim, then she's a surah to you. If she's a surah to you, then you should divorce her. So here was a bayis, or attempt by a bayis, to prove to us that Ed Echad is enough with the shtikat abal to force a divorce, to make her a surah to him. Rava interprets it slightly differently to say that it's not a proof. So Abai brings an additional proof. Tatanya, maseh b'yanaya melech. There was an incident with Yanaya Melech. Now, Yanaya Melech appears other places in Shas, Gemara and Brachot as well. Who exactly is? Most people identify him possibly with Yochanan Hurkunus, which is possibly Yochanan Kohen Gadol. That is the way that Josephus notes who it is over here. Even though over here it says Yanaya Melech, nevertheless, sometimes Yanaya Melech was also used to refer to Yochanan Hurkunus. The other thing is that that might match with the Mishnah in Avot that says that a person should not be somech on himself ad yom moto. That a person should not be confident or somech on himself until the day of his death, because there's a possibility that at the point before one's death that they could go off the path. The example that they bring over there is Yochanan Kohen Gadol. Shishimesh kimuna gadola shmonim shana, that he worked in the kuna gadola for such a long time, and then he turned into a tzuki at the end of his life. This story also might be about that same individual, and might be because of his disenchantment here in this story. So because of those reasons, it's very possible that we're talking about here Yochanan Kohen Gadol, or Yochanan Hurkunus, who is one of the early Chashmonaim kings. Shalach the kuchlit shebimidbar. He went down to Kuchlit in the Midbar. Sham Shishim Krachim. He had a successful escapade down there where he was able to capture and conquer those areas. And again, under him, the Chashmonaim expand greatly. And he was obviously very excited or wanted to celebrate the victory. Calls all the Chachmei Israel together to celebrate. Amar lehem, Abutena, you ochlim miluchim. Our forefathers used to eat these salty items when they were building the Beit HaMikdash. Rashi over here says that the Binyan Beit HaMikdash we're speaking about here is Bayit Sheni. And that when they came in the time of Ezra and Bayit Sheni, they were extremely poverty stricken. And therefore they only ate these salty vegetables, or really sichim, these plants that were salty out of poverty. The Reinu Hananel over here suggests possibly that it was talking about the Mishkan and in the Midbar, although that's very hard to understand. Most believe, like Rashi, that we're talking about Bayit Sheni. So, Afanu Ne'achal Meluchim, Zecher La'avoteinu. So let us do the same thing now to remember what our forefathers did, I mean how poverty-stricken they are and how far we've come. I mean that we now have autonomy, self-determination, we are ruled by a Jewish king, and now the empire is expanding, and we are much more wealthy. They're upgrading the Beit HaMikdash. So they brought them on tables of gold. I mean, that indicates the status of where they were that day. But they're eating food as a zecher to what their beginnings were, their more humble and pious beginnings were. There was someone there, a little bit of a clown, someone who was evil, bliyal, without any sense of what's proper, what's right. The way that Chazal describe him, it's clear here that they're blaming the incident on this individual. Elazar ben Poira Shimo. And his name was Elazar ben Poira. V'yomer Elazar ben Poira li Yanai Melech, libam shel Prushim Alecha. That the hearts of the Prushim are on you. Again, it's a terminology that's borrowed from Shimshon, which is the way that when they say Plishtim Alecha, right, that they're coming to get you. So also over here, he's saying that the Prushim have it out for you. Umaaseh, so he says, how will I know? So he says, Hakem lehem b'tzitz sheben einecha. You should get up there and put the tzitz on in order to test them, and I'll show you that they really don't like you, or they really have it in for you. They're looking to get rid of you. Rashi over here asks a question. What do you mean, Hakem lehem b'tzitz ben einecha? You're not allowed to wear the big day kahuna. So Rashi over here says, "Va'afagav delav shat avoda." Even though it wasn't the time of avoda, that he is a kohen. He's from the Chashmonaic dynasty, and therefore he was a kohen because the Chashmonaim were kohanim. That he was the king. He was the Kohen, and now he wants to be the Kohen Gadol, seemingly, is what's happening here. So he puts on the tzitz to act as the Kohen Gadol as well. So Rashi asks, how could he do that? How does he put on the big day kahuna when it's Shlo B'Shat Avoda? Rashi says, if Alpha Gavdalav Shat Avoda, we learned back on Daf Nun Dalid, big day kahuna, nitnu le'enot bam, that you allowed to get enough from big day kahuna because lo nitnu le'malachei sharet. That you can't strip off the big day kahuna immediately after you finish avoda because we're not malachim, and therefore you have a dispensation to utilize the big day kahuna. Tosafot takes issue with Rashi's explanation over here and says that that is when it's proximate to the avoda. So we don't make you strip the clothing off immediately. You can take your time. You can take it off in a proper and a mechubad way, but that doesn't mean that there's a carte blanche to get benefit from the put on the big day kahuna whenever you like, or to use them whenever you like. So Tosafot rejects that. The Rabbeinu Tam suggests, on the other hand, that here we're talking about the tzitz. And with regards to the tzitz, it says tamid, that the Kohen Gadol has to wear it tamid all the time. There happens to be a machoket in Menachot. What does it mean, tamid? One day on the Gemara Menachot means tamid, it always he has to wear all the time. The Kohen Gadol must wear the tzitz all the time if he wants it to be mechaper. There other daya there is that tamid, when he's wearing it, he has to have his mind on the tzitz, because he has the Shem Hashem on it, and he always has to be focused on the tzitz that he's wearing. From there, the Gemara learns a Kav HaChomer to tefillin, which have many more Shemot Hashem than a person's wearing tefillin that they have to have in mind, or know that they're aware of the fact that they are wearing tefillin. But either way, the word tamid over there doesn't exactly mean what the Rabbeinu Tam, and even if you do say what the Rabbeinu Tam said, it might be a machloket. The Rabbeinu Tam says that the tzitz is unique, because it says tamid, and therefore the Kohen Gadol can put it on at any time. Most believe, first of all, that the tzitz is no different than any of the other bigadim. Whatever you believe is true for the tzitz is true for the other bigadim. And many more believe also that the tzitz, you don't have that right by the tzitz just to put it on whatever you want. The Ramban says probably what the simplest explanation is here is, he wasn't doing this halachically. He put on the tzitz because he wanted to put on the tzitz. The guy told him put on the tzitz. He wasn't thinking about what are the halachic ramifications of putting on a tzitz. The guy said, you want to test them? Put on the tzitz. So Rashi says over here, why did he do this? Because Hashfisha Shem Katuv Bo, the Shem Hashem is their name, glue et libam. And that will reveal what is in their hearts. So from Rashi, it seems almost a metaphysical, mystical thing that's going to happen is you put on the Shem Hashem on the tzitz, they're all going to get up, and that's going to happen. They're going to just start pouring out their hearts because of the Shem Hashem. Now, the Tosfot Riyaz Zakein over here reads it slightly differently. To me, I think you could read it into Rashi as well, but he says that they will then make it clear, or it'll become obvious, that which they believe, that they don't want you to be the Kohen Gadol. So not it's some sort of metaphysical, mystical idea that the tzitz is going to get them to reveal their hearts, but because of their opposition to you being the Kohen Gadol, that's going to cause them then to speak about it. So put this on, because that will trigger them responding negatively to you. So I think you could easily, or just as easily, read that into Rashi as well. But the Tosafot Riyaz Zakein says that it's because they're going to object to what you're doing, that's what's going to force them to speak up over here. So that's what he does. So what he did, Hei kim lahem b'tzitz shebin einav. So he got up there and put on the tzitz in front of them. Hayasham zaken echad, v'Yehuda ben Gedidia shemo. And his name was Yehuda ben Gedidia. V'yomer Yehuda ben Gedidia liyanei melech. Yanei melech. Rav lecha keter machut. It's enough that you're the king. Haneich keter kuna lezerosh el Aron. Why don't you leave the kuna gedolah to the descendants of Aron? Now, even though Yanai HaMelech here was a descendant of Aron, we're going to see in a second there were some questions about his lineage. But meantime, there's also a restriction, or generally we oppose the king and the Kohen Gadol being the same individual. The Ramban speaks about this extensively in Parshat Vayechi, and he says that why the Hashmoneic dynasty met such a terrible end is because they usurped the power of Malchut from Bnei Yehuda, and they were Kohanim. And so to have a Kohen Gadol and the king be the same individual is improper, or the Torah rejects such an idea, mostly because of balance of power, which is we don't want the seat of power, both of Kuna Gdolah and Malchut, sitting with one individual. The statement over here of Rav Lach Keter Malchut is similar to what the people are saying to Uziyahu. Uziyahu HaMelech, who wasn't a Kohen, decided that he also wanted to be Makriv Ketoret in the Mikdash. After he's very successful, he almost, in a sense, unites the Malchut Israel, Malchut Yehuda, and he comes to the Beit HaMikdash, and he wants to be Makriv Ketoret. And they basically tell him the same thing. It's enough that you're the king. Leave the Torah for those that do it. He insists, and as he's going to do it, he breaks out with Tzarat when he's going to bring the Torah on the Mizbeach. So that's Mesupar in Nach. Over here, they're using similar terminology, which is, it's enough that you're the king. Why are you trying to be the Kohen Gadol as well? But what you're just suggesting over here is an answer that's given by the Ramban and others in Parshat Vayechi. What about the fact that Shaul was appointed by God to be the king? Isn't that a usurping of the power of Yehuda? And isn't that a violation of that same violation that he's saying that the Chashmonaim did? So he says that it's only a violation if it's set up as a malchut that's going to be permanent. And not something that's a temporary bridge type of government. Then it's not an issue, because then you're not usurping power. You're simply waiting until you get someone from Yehuda in place, filling a void. So that same answer that you give by Binyamin, which is not so simple, because over there originally it seems that Shaul is going to create a dynasty and Yonatan is going to inherit after him. There the Ramban answers that he was going to be power-sharing agreement between Yehuda and Binyamin. But here, you could have argued that in the beginning of the Chashmonaim, that you had that same answer, that it was a temporary bridge or void-filling position. But here, once already they established and it became the Chashmonaic dynasty, that's where it becomes very problematic here, that they have both the kingship and the Kohanah Gedolah. Now, it's obvious that he's not giving up the kingship. They're pushing him away from the Kohanah Gedolah, but we're going to see here, it's not because of the reason that we said that they both shouldn't be there, but simply because they thought he possibly was not Ra'ui. They would much rather have him be the Kohen Gadol, because he is a Kohen, and get someone else to be the king. But obviously they're not going to be able to depose him as the king, so they're in a little bit of a bind. But this individual stands up and says, this makes a lot of sense that his mother was taken captive in Modi'im. Modi'im is one of the key operating areas, the capital where the Chashmonaim come from. And it says that in the battles around Modi'im, his mother was taken into captivity. They checked it out. And they found that there was no corroborating evidence to this. The Chachmei Yisrael left in anger. Now, why they left in anger? There was no reason for them to be angry over here because there was no evidence to what was being stated. So as Rashi says over here, Shikasa Melech Aleihem. They left in a manner of anger or upset because the king got upset at them. Why did the king get upset at them? Because this Yehuda ben Gedidya made a claim that he wasn't ra'oi to be the Kohen Gadol. He cast aspersions on his ichus. Now they went and investigated and they found nothing wrong. Now why they hadn't investigated it until now? Likely because it hadn't come to the forefront. Even though technically for a king you also have to check ichus, that might only be in derabanan. For Kohen you need to check a doraita. So they only brought it to the forefront when he started to usurp the position of the Kohen Gadol, then they brought it to the forefront. Or, if you say he was already the Kohen Gadol, he just wanted to push the button, maybe they thought it was an Eitz Ratzon, because he was coming back from this victory, and maybe he'd be more apt to listen to them at this point, so they raised the issue over here. So even though he had been around for a while, and all this had been going on for a while, they only raised it now because they felt that they had it was an opportune time to deal with it. But in the end, they found that there was no corroborating evidence to this fact. Yomer Elazar ben Puriya liyanei melech. Yanei melech. Ejol shebi Yisrael. Kach hu dino. If it was just a layperson amongst Klal Yisrael, that's how they would treat him. This is what they would do. After he put on the tzitz, they'd start asking about his ichus, and then they'd go and check it, you know, they'd make public statements about his ichus before having checked it out. Va'ata melech v'kohen gadol. You're a king and a kohen gadol. Kach hu dincha. This is the way that they should treat you. How do you let them treat you like this? Umaseh. So Yanei Melech says, what should I do? Imata shumei alatzati. If you listen to me, he says, Elazar ben Poira, romsam, you should trample them, crush them, basically rid yourself of them. So Yanei says, Torah matei alea, get rid of the chachamim, what's going on? Aray, krucha munechet bekeren zavit. We're talking about the Torah is still there, we don't need them, we got the Torah. Kol rotzel l'umot, yavo v'umot. Anybody wants to come to learn Torah, they can learn Torah. You don't need the chachamim to learn Torah. Then he was captured by some apikursut. Because why did he accept this claim? He should have responded, Tinach Torah Shibichtav, Torah Shibopeh Mai. That works well for the written Torah. What are you going to do about the oral tradition? That you do need the Chachamim for. The fact that he didn't respond to that, so Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak calls that apikursut, meaning that he forgot about or he left out the Torah Shibopeh and he just focused on the Torah Shibichtav. Meyad, but Totse Tzara, Ayadei Elazar ben Poira, Rashi brings two meanings for it over here. One is Vayetzei Tzitz Vayigmol Shkedim, that it began to blossom or bud. Tzitzei Tzara means it started to bubble up or emerged the bad. Or the other possibility brings from Lashon Notzutzim is Kenitzel. It's like a spark that kindled the bad. So that caused the bad to begin over here. It seems to me that this is a play on the word Tzitz. The fact that he put on the Tzitz and that caused the problem. Now Vitotzeitz Hara'ah. They're using the noun as a verb now to say that the bad came about. Midah keneged midah. Ayudei Elazar ben Poira. Because of this Elazar ben Poira, this terrible incident then began to unfold. Ve'agru kol chochmei Yisrael. And they killed all of the chochmei Yisrael. Ve'olam mishtomeim. Then the world was empty or desolate. Ad shebashim metshetach. Ve'gzirat ha-Torah liyoshnah. Until Shimon Shechet came back and taught the Torah and returned Torah to its former glory. The reason Shimon ben Shetach is able to do that is because Yanai HaMelech is married to Shimon Shetach's sister. And that's told over in the stories in the Gemara and Brachot with regards to Yanai HaMelech, that they call in Shimon ben Shetach to be machriya on certain halachot. Sometimes to be machriya between the king and the queen, but on certain halachot in the Gemara and Brachot. So Shimon ben Shetach is hidden by his sister to protect him from Yanai HaMelech. Only after Yanai promises not to kill him, does she bring him out of hiding, and then Shimon ben Shetach is able to return the Prushim to their former glory. But it seems here that Yanai HaMelech was lost to the cause of the Tzitzukim, and this leads to a tense or tension that continues for probably 200 years afterwards about the Prushim and Tzitzukim with regards to the Kuna Gdola. Many of those stories or those incidents are mentioned in the Gemara in Yoma, with regards to Kohen Gadol and Yoma Kippurim. What's interesting over here, Professor Gaffney, who is a professor of the Talmudic period in Hebrew University, is amazing, both speaker and professor, notes over here is the Gemara's positive disposition towards the Hashmonaic dynasty, which is that in general, the Gemara is very favorable towards them. You see that here, you see that in instances where the Chachamim in the Mishnayot go to visit Shlom Tzion Amalka and her Sukkah, and despite the somewhat secular nature of these kings, they generally abided by the Chachamim, and the Chachamim, again, were positively disposed towards them. A lot of it has to do with the fact that they had now returned autonomy and self-determination to the Jews, and they felt that that was a geula of sorts, and therefore they looked favorably upon them. You can see that in this story. The story here blames this Elazar ben Poira for everything that happens. First of all, the way that it terms him in the beginning is that he's a leitz, levra ublial. So it, first of all, just incriminates him from the beginning about what his motives are and what he does. And even when Yanai HaMelech acts, in all the cases, he's very passive. What should I do? Do I do this? Do I do that? It doesn't seem to be his own decision. It means that he's, Elazar ben Poira is pushing him along the whole way. And then in the last thing is, even when he goes to kill him, Nizrak Habo Apikorsut. Something like he got, some Apikorsut got a wind of Apikorsut caught him, and that's what caused him to do this. So again, the story itself shifts the blame away from Yanai and more towards Elazar ben Poira. And the Gemara, again, in general, this is one of the worst stories with regards to the Hashmonaic dynasty versus the Prushim. And yet, the story doesn't even seem so bad. I mean, that it doesn't incriminate Yanai HaMelech in many ways. Again, Yehuda ben Gedidya also, when he objects, he only objects to the Kuna, he doesn't object to the Malchut. But also, the questions surrounding his lineage, the fact that anybody brought it up is interesting. And again, the Chachamim seem to here be blaming him for bringing it up when it wasn't substantiated. And so a lot of the blame is shifted away from Yanai HaMelech, and because of that, he suggests that the Gemara's general favorable disposition is borne out over here in one of the worst stories, where you see that they barely blame Yanai HaMelech for that which happened. And again, from there forward, Yanai HaMelech is not favorably disposed towards the Prushim, except maybe for Shimon Shetach, who's his brother-in-law. But other than that, he really favors the side of the Tzitzukim. And again, if you match that, if Yanai HaMelech here is Yochanan Hyrcanus, and Yochanan Kohen Gadol is also Yochanan Hyrcanus, meaning that both of them, it's not clear who to identify them as in terms of the kings of the Hashmonaim. But if you identify both of those as the same individual, that again would explain that Mishnah and Avot, which is Al-Tamid Ba'atzvacha Yomotcha, and there they reference Yochanan Kohen Gadol, who switched over the side of Tzitzukim after many, many years of service and being a Prushi. We actually match up with this story over here where this person is trying to trigger a tension between Yanai HaMelech and the Prushim. The Gzirat HaTorah LeYoshna here by Shimon Shetach, which is the rallying cry that was taken up by Rav Avadya Yosef when he started to bring back what he called it Sephardi pride. That was how they termed it. They termed it like Zira to Torah the Yoshna, like Zira Torah the Yoshna, to return the crown or the Torah or the glory to the former ones who really had it. And who are the four? That's the Sephardim. And that's really about this revolution that Rav Avadya Yosef began. It uses this similar type of language. So, Echidami, what was the case here? I mean, what was the incident where they thought that possibly his mother was questionable in terms of her lineage? Elam the Beitre. If you say they were to Edim Amrei Ishtabai, that she was taken into captivity. Beitre Amrei Lo Ishtabai. And do Edim say that she was not taken into captivity? My chazit to samach ahani. Why did you rely on these edim? Smoch ahani. Rely on the other edim. So you could read this in one of two ways, which is, the way that Rashi reads it is, why are you believing the edim that say that she was not taken into captivity? You should believe the edim that she was taken into captivity. So Rashi reads this as being, after they already looked into the matter, they found out that there was edut mucheshet. Two edim saying yes, two edim saying no. And therefore they let it go. So the Gemara asks on that, why do they say let it go? Maybe we should believe the Edim that say that she was taken into captivity. Now Rashi says, wait a minute, when you have Edim to Mucheshet, you basically say the Edut is gone, and then what we're left with is the Chazaka. And his mother has a Chezkat Kashrut. Until that point in time, she was a Ksheira, and therefore she has a Chezkat Kashrut, so Mamid et Isha b'Chezkata, and she should be Ksheira. What was the question here? I mean, why is the Gemara suggesting otherwise? So Rashi says over here that the question was not about his mother. The question is about him. In Ochanami, if the question was about his mother, she has a Chezkat Kashrut. On the other hand, Yanai Melech does not have a Chezkat Kashrut because of these rumors that were circulating. That means from the time of his birth already, he did not have a Chazakah because of the questions surrounding his mother. So because of that, he doesn't have a Chezkat Kashrut. Tosafot rejects that completely. He says there's no way you can say that. That a Chezkat Kashrut applies to the mother. If it applies to the mother, it applies to the son. Because we saw that in the Gemara in Ketubot, that when there's Nemanut or Chezkat Kashrut, that's for the Ima and the Bita. Doesn't matter if it's the mother or the daughter. They're both granted the same Chezkat Kashrut if we believe that the mother had a Chezkat Kashrut. And Yanai Melech should have been granted the same rights that his mother had in terms of Chezkat Kashrut. And therefore he rejects that. He suggests, on the other hand, that he says that we only say uki trei gavi trei when it's truma de rabbanan. Aval be yuchsin, when we're dealing with yuchsin, she has the ika iser doraita. When you're talking about a din doraita, echmiru. There they were machmir vasurahi mi de rabbanan. So mi de rabbanan, they were oser over here. So what he suggests over here is that when you're dealing with din de rabbanan, okay, to be makil is to be makil when you have edut mucheshet. But when you have edut mucheshet and a din doraita, that's a serious matter. If he goes in to be a Kohen, he's not supposed to be a Kohen, he's in violation of series of Dinim Deoraita when he does a Voda, when he goes into the Migdash, all the things that he does. That's too risky. So even though we have Edut Mucheshet, we'd be Machmir Midra Banan not to allow him to go through. That's how Tosafot asks about Uki Trei B'Hadei Trei. Others suggest, and we have seen this Machloket before, Tosafot himself deals with it, is what is the status of when you have Uki Trei B'Hadei Trei? What does it mean that when you say you have Edut Mucheshet, what do we do at that point in time? When you have Edut that is now in a teiku, or in basically a situation where it's a hung decision because they have two Edim on both sides, so you have no evidence to either side. So one possibility is to view is that they don't exist. Come on, delay to dummy. It's as if they're not there. And if they're not there, then we don't worry about them and you go back to Chazaka. There is another view that once you have two versus two, you're left in a sfeika. You're left in a case of safek. It's not to mandalate the dam. It's not as if there's nothing here, but now we're in a face of a safek where we can't be machriya. So if you have a safek where you can't be machriya, we go to the principles of safek. What are the principles of safek? Safek doraita lechumra, safek derabonon lekula. That might be also what Tosfot is referencing here, because Tosfot in other places suggests that when you have two versus two, maybe it's not Kaman Deleta, but rather it's a Sveika. And once you have a Sveika, then you deal with Sveika Durabanan versus Sveika Doraita. Over here we're dealing with the Din Doraita, it's Sveika Doraita. So that might be another way that the Gemara is reading it. You could read the Gemara over here the opposite way of Rashi and Tosafot and many of the Rishonim and just say, why did they even bring up the issue? If it was two versus two, then why do they believe the Edim that said that she was problematic versus the Edim that said she wasn't problematic? Why do they even raise the issue to start with? So either way, that can't be the explanation. Ella, Beit Echad. It must be over here that there's an Eid Echad. Time to come actually Beit Rei. So there was an Eid Echad originally that cast dispersion on Yanai Melech's Yichus. Then we found two Edim that said that it wasn't the case. So these two Edim come and override the testimony of the 1-8. Halav Hachi. Had it not been for these two Edim, Mehemin, he would have been believed. Well, what does that say? If he would have been believed, that's supportive of a Abaye's position that if you have one aid that comes to testify to a davar shebe'erva, if we don't have any response from the other party, then that aid echad is neman. Va'acha, Rava, the olam trehu treh. Rava says, no, it was two against two. Uchdama ravacha bar miyume be'edei hazama. When we said two against two here, it wasn't edut mucheshet, but rather the unique case, the chiddush of the Torah of hazama, which is that the second Seidim, Eidim, came along and said him, Imanu Aitim, you were with us. There's no way you could testify about her. You were with us at that time. The second Eidim, they are given believability over the first Eidim, even though it's two versus two. That's the Chiddush HaTorah, Be'edei Hazama. That was the case here. Hachanami Be'edei Hazama. That was the incident here. V'ibay Deima, Kid Rabbi Yitzchak. It's like Rabbi Yitzchak, Dama Rabbi Yitzchak, Shifka Yechnisu Tachta. That what they didn't realize was that she was swapped out for a Shifcha. Which is that after she was taken into captivity, there was either a shifcha with her originally, and since there was a shifcha with her, the shifcha could testify on her behalf, or they basically kidnapped her and replaced her with a shifcha so the enemy wouldn't know, or they wouldn't realize what had happened. They swapped her out with a shifcha, and so the people testifying were testifying a woman. They thought it was Yanai's mother, but it really was a shifcha who had been put in her place, or traded in her place. So because of that, they were telling the truth, but their truth was about someone they didn't realize was not Yanai's mother in the end. And that's why the second Edim are believed, because their testimony corroborates or agrees with the first testimony, but just says you got the wrong woman. You're testifying about the wrong woman that's there because she wasn't there. So for those reasons, Rava suggests that the incident here was a two versus two, and then it wouldn't be approved to Abaye's position. It'd be like Rava who says you always need two by Davar Shebe'erva. So Amar Rava, now Rava gets his turn. Mana Aminala. How will I show you that I'm right? That's none. Amar Rabbi Shimon Maseh b'Migura shel Diskim b'Yavne. There was this incident where there were water pools shel Diskim b'Yavne. Rashi says over here, Diskim, probably the more likely reading over here is Diskis, which is Shem Adam, is the name of a person, or Shem Makom, or name of a place. Likely it's from the Diskis, the Greek word disk, which means a circular area. So either this person was rounder in shape, or the area was round, or it looked like a disc, and therefore it took on the name Diskim B'Yavna. Shaito Medet B'Chezkat Shleima. That a chazaka, these pools of water, had a chazaka that they were 40 sa'ah. And since they were 40 sa'ah, they were mikvot, ksherot, umadudu. One day they went and measured them, v'nimtzeit chasera. And then they found that it had less than 40 sa'ah. Kol tarot shenasu agaba, all the tarot that were done before this, ayar Rabbi Tarfon mitaher. Rabbi Tarfon says, anything done before this point in time is tor. From here forward, here to forward, it is problematic, they would be tameim. Rabbi Kiva mitamei, Rabbi Kiva says, retroactively, they are tamei. So Rabbi Tarfon is similar to the first Mishnah Nida. If you look at the first Mishnah Nida, a woman who finds herself to be a Nida, or tameyah, she has a setting of dam, how far retroactively do we say that she was Tmeyah? So there we had a machloket between Hillel and Shammai. When it comes to a Nida, Beit Hillel says that she is Tmeyah back to the last time she did a check. The last time she checked herself, she was Torah. Then everything she did from that point to here, she's Tmeyah. Beit Shammai says, Dayashata. Whenever you find it, that's when she's Tmeyah. From there forward, she's Tmeyah, nothing retroactively. The Chachamim, which is the middle position, the way we paskin is, that mi'eit le'eit reduces the p'kidah le'p'kidah, and p'kidah le'p'kidah, it reduces mi'eit le'eit. I mean, it's the lesser of 24 hours, or the last time she checked. That's how far we go back retroactively. Rabbi Tarfon here is similar to that position of Beit Shammai over there, that says, dayashata, that whenever you find the tumah, we believe that's when the tumah started, nothing going backwards. So to over here, the mikvahot where tohorot until now, you found evidence to the contrary, from that point forward, that's where the evidence matters. Until that point, we assume that they were whole or they were good. Rabbi Kiva, on the other hand, is similar to that Shita of Beit Hillel, which is that we look at it retroactively, which is interesting, again, because Rabbi Akiva, in many ways, was associated with Beit Shammai, or the Shita of the Beit Shammai. So it's interesting over here that he is taking up that position, Beit Hillel, that retroactively there is Tumah. So I'm Rabbi Tarfon, Mikveh Zeh B'Cheskat Shalem Hu Omeid. Rabbi Tarfon says, until this point, at Achazoka, that it was Ksheira. Misafek, Atah Bala Chasro. Now Misafek, because we don't know when it went under the proper minimum Shiur, then why would you change it Misafek? Al Taksareno Misafek. Don't reduce it Misafek. So I'm Rabbi Akiva. Adam Zeh B'Cheskat Tamehu Hu Omeid. Wait a minute, the person who went into the Mikveh, the very Tzvein that you put in the Mikveh, they had a Cheskat Tameh. They, till this point, were considered to be Tmeim. Misafek ata bal taro. Now, because out of a safek, you want to make them tor. Al tatarenu misafek. Don't make him tor, misafek. Basically, our machloket is which chazaka trumps. Is it the chazaka of the mikveh that was tor until this point? Or is it the chazaka of the person that they were tamei? Which one of those is the chazaka that you rely on? So, I'm Rabbi Tarfon, Mashal, Lo'umeid, Umakriv, Agave Mizbeach. Rabbi Tarfon says that this is like a Kohen who's standing on the Mizbeach, bringing a Kurban. Nodash, who ben Gushal ben Chalutza. And then they find out that he has a problem with the Zichus, that he is the son of a Gushal or Chalutza, meaning that he is not Ra'ui to be a Kohen, is a Kohen Chalau, and he can't do a Voda. Shabarutel Kushira. That is a Voda until the point that we know that he's a ben Gushal ben Chalutza. His avoda is kshera. From that point forward, it's obviously psula, because at that moment, he changes into a coin halal. Amar Rabbi Akiva, mashal omeidu makriyo gabi mizbeach. No, the mashal is like someone standing on mizbeach, menodashu balmum. And then we find out that he has a blemish in him, that he's a coin balmum that can't do avoda. Shabodoto psula, that his avoda is psula, not only here too forward, but even retroactively, all of what he'd done until this point in time was also psula. Now, Tosfot already raises issues with regards to the Mashal here. What, the Mashal is not exactly like the case of the Mikveh. In the case of the Mikveh, you have a circumstance in which you have an Adam Tamei, a Mikveh that was a Cheska Tara, and now we get new information, which is that the Mikveh now was missing. And since the Mikveh was missing, therefore, we now want to discuss whether that's from here to forward, it's considered to be missing, and everything else beforehand was tor. Or do we say retroactively that all these cheskat tuma that existed cannot be removed by a mikvah that is b'safek? Because it says that it's not exactly the same case, because by the case of the ben gusha ben chalutza, even if we know for certain that he's now ben gusha and chel chalutza, that means all the avoda he did before was done as a ben gusha ben chalutza. Nevertheless, the avoda is ksheira. In our case, in the mikvah, if we knew for sure that the mikvah was missing that 40 sa'a a week ago, then anything done during that week would definitely be problematic. It's not exactly alike, because in our case by the Kohen, even if we know for certain that he's a ben grusha ben chalutza, that would not change the fact that his avoda was ksheira until this point in time. By the mikveh, if we found out that information, we would definitely make everything tameh. Yes, it's a safek now for both of them, but the cases are not identical. Therefore, Tosafot suggests that they're actually betarte plige. He says that they're actually arguing about two different issues, and one of those issues is similar to this case, which is, one is, they're arguing about tarot that went into the mikveh, limafreya, meaning retroactively. This is a case where it wasn't known whether the mikveh was missing retroactively. They're also arguing about a case where a kohen went to this mikveh, and now he's coming to do avoda in the mikdash. So now we find out, then if we find out the mikveh was chaser retroactively, okay, we know the kohen was now problematic, he was tamei. What is the status of his avoda? Now that question is similar to the question of ben grusha ben chalutza. By the ben grusha ben chalutza, we find out that he's a ben grusha ben chalutza, we say, doesn't matter, it's still ksheira retroactively. For Kiva says no compared to a Baal Mom, and it would be problematic. Same thing with this Kohen who went to this mikveh. We find out now that the mikveh was chaser. Now that we know that the mikveh is chaser, and he comes to do avoda, what is his status? Do we say that his avoda he did already is ksheira, like a ben grusha ben chalutza? Or do we say that his avoda is psula, because he's like a Baal Mom? And so therefore, Tosafot says that they're actually arguing about two different issues, and one would shed light on the other issue, which is, once we know that when they know for sure that the mikveh was tamei, what his status is, then we could also opine on what the situation would be safek, when the mikveh was in a case of safek. Others say that the Mashal and Nimshal are not exactly alike. It's just a general direction, this idea that you could have a safek about something. And it still doesn't mean that retroactively we make everything pasul. There is such a concept that in the cases of safek, that we only make the problem or deal with the problem forward-looking and not backwards-looking. And that's the nature of this mashal, not to go and nitpick about the exact details of how it matches up with the scenario. That's another way to deal with this problem within the mashal. So your question is also asked in this case, which is that by the case of the Kohen, once we have the information, then the information's true, and not only true now, but it's true in the past, because you don't just become a Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza, that's the way that you were born. On the other hand, by the mikveh, you're relying on somebody's testimony who measured it. So who says that he measured it properly? Who says that he did the right thing? There's an aspect of Nemanut over here, and maybe he did the wrong measurements, or his measurements weren't great, and as an SL,
maybe the water evaporated.
Right. So we don't know what happened, and even if you know for certain now that it's missing, that doesn't mean when he measured it, he was right, or it doesn't even mean that before that point in time it was right. So that also makes a problem between the Mashal and the Nimshal. Basically, and again, the answer that most likely is that this is a loose Mashal. It's not exact. And what they're after is this idea that once you find out information, what is the impact of knowing that information? Does it have retroactive impact or does it not have retroactive impact? And that we have from the case of Avoda and the Kohen, we see that there are two different models. And the question is, which of those models should we apply to the mikveh? So then, Amar Rabbi Tarfon, Ata Demitu the Baal Mum. You compared him to a Baal Mum, Vani Demitiv the Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza. And I compared it to a case of Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza. Nireh the Mi Domeh. Let's see which one it's more similar to. Either Meh the Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza, Nidonenu Ke Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza. If he's more similar, if this case is more similar to the case of Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza, then we'll have the same din with regards to this mikveh. If this mikveh is more like a Baal Mum, the donenu ka Baal Mum. So Yitzchok Rabbi Akiva Ladun. So Rabbi Akiva here began to logically make an argument. So they have an argument about what it's compared to. Now the question is, who's right? What is this more like? Is the mikveh more like the case of Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza? Is the mikveh more like the case of Baal Mum? So mikveh psulo biyachid. By the mikveh, it's pasul by the testimony of a single individual. Baal Mum psulo biyachid. And similar, by a Baal Mum, a single individual here is saying that this person is a Baal Mum, and he's believed. And by the case of Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza, you need two people to cast aspersions on his yichus and call him a Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza. So that's one thing that differentiates them. That makes mikveh look a lot more like Baal Mum than it does like Grusha and Chalutza, because by Grusha and Chalutza we require two edim. Whereas by a mum and mikveh, we only require one aid to make them psulim. Davar acher, mikveh psulo bigufo. Then mikveh, the problem is inherently in the mikveh. It's missing part of the minimum shiur that it needs. Baal mum psulo bigufo. So to a baal mum, the psul is in him, physically in his body. Vayochir ben grusha ben chuzash psulo me'acherim. Ben grusha ben chalutza, his psul has nothing to do with him, it has to do with his parents. That has to do with the fact that a Kohen married a Grusha, or a Kohen Gadol married an Almanah and made him into a Kohen Chalal. So he has a metaphysical mum, he doesn't have a physical mum. It's not inherent in him, it's something that was passed to him because of the behavior of his parents. So therefore, those are reasons to say that the case of mikveh looks a lot more like the case of Baal Mum than it does Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza. Amalei Rabbi Tarfon, Akiva, kol ha'poreish mimcha, ha'poreish min ha'chaim. Anybody who leaves you is like leaving life. Meaning that Rabbi Tarfon sees in Rabbi Akiva's logic over here a winning argument. And seemingly Rabbi Tarfon now agrees to the position of Rabbi Akiva. And that might be why Rabbi Tarfon is not found in all those opinions that we see in the Gemara Nida, Mishnayot and Nida, because Rabbi Tarfon seemingly changed his mind over here and agrees with Rabbi Akiva. This is also what I mentioned before about Rabbi Akiva and being Doresh, the Etim, that Shimon HaMsuni was Doresh. I mentioned there that Rabbi Akiva had a tremendous power of logic rather than all Mesora. And you see that coming up right here where he's arguing on Rabbi Tarfon. It's clear that Rabbi Akiva's logic is what trumps over here, not necessarily his Mesora. So now the Gemara wants to understand what exactly is the scenario over here. Hai Baal Mum, Shepsula B'Yachid, Eichidami. Now you said, Rabbi Akiva said that the Baal Mum can be made Pasul by an Eid Echad. What is exactly the scenario? Either ka machishlei mi mehemen. If the Kohen denies it, then why is the Eidecha Neman? Everybody agrees when there's hachachashof of the Baal against the Eidecha, that the Eidecha is not Neman. Ela the Shotik. It must be that the Kohen is silent. After he says, you're a Baal Mom, the Kohen says nothing back. Urkabatei. And similarly, by Geben Grusha Ben Chalutza, the Shotik. And by the case of Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza, there's also a case of the Shotik, where he was silent. He had no response to it. Piktani. And it says, Mikveh Psulo B'Yachid, Ubalmo Psulo B'Yachid, V'ayochiach Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza, Psulo B'Shnayim. So what you see from here is that only by the case of Balmum does the Eid Echad work. But the Eid Echad does not work by the Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza, because that's a Davar Shebe'erva. Davar Shebe'erva requires two. And so we see that even though there was silence over here, and an Eid Echad, according to you, Abaye, an Eid Echad would be sufficient by Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza as well. You have an Eid Echad plus silence that should have worked. Why does Rabbi Akiva say that by the Balmum, one Eid in silence, and by the Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza, two Eidim and silence? For you, it should be sufficient with one Eid. Rava says, that's a proof to me that you need two Eidim when it comes to a Davar Shebe'erva. So Abaye Amar, Lolam Tika Machishle. It's a case when the Kohen denies the testimony of the one Eid. Biktamar, it's Amai Mehemen. So then why is the one Eid believed? What Abaye is suggesting over here is that the case is one Eid came to testify, and the Kohen is arguing on him. So in the case of Ben Grusha, Ben Chalutza, he's not going to be believed, because even Abaye agrees that it only works when you have an Eid Echad and silence. That's when it works. But here you have an Eid Echad, and the Kohen arguing on him, so by Ben Grusha, Ben Chalutza, he's not believed. The question now is, why is he believed by Baal Mum? You have an Eid Echad saying something, and the Baalim, the Kohen, denying it. Why do you give credence to the statement of the Eid Echad? The answer is like what you said. Damarlei shalech achve. Said, strip your clothes off and let us see. You know, this is a checkable incident. You know, all you have to do is tell the Kohen, this is what Rashi says, strip off your clothes and let's check out what's going on over here. The Tosafot says the same thing. Hefshit. Targum shel v'hefshit is v'shalach. That you take off your clothing. Let us check it out. Mikan yesh lochiach. That by anything that even can be checked, an Eid Echad is believed. Even in a case where there's another Eid denying it or up against him. Meaning that in things that can be checked out, an Eid Echad gains extra Nemanut. Because, first of all, we can check it. And number two is, there's no reason for him to lie knowing that we can check it. And therefore, he gains additional believability in this case. Now, whether we have to actually check it is a good question, but the fact that the Eid Echad is testifying over here, and we have an ability to check it, those two things together give the Eid Echad more power, even if the Kohen is denying it. Because in the end, if he wants to deny it, let him show us that he's not a Baal Mum, and then we won't have to worry about it. The fact that he's not doing that, even though he's denying it, shows you that the Eid Echad is Ne'eman in this case. So that's what Abaye says. We're talking about a case of Eid Echad where the Kohen denies it. In the case of the Baal Mum, his denial is not strong enough to break the Nemanut of the Eid Echad. By Ben Grusha and Chalutza, it is strong enough to break the Nemanut of the Eid Echad, because over there, there's nothing backing up the Eid Echad. In the case of Baal Mum, he has the backup, which is the Kohen's not showing us his body. If he wants to really disprove this Eid Echad, he just shows us his body and we'll be done with the situation. And that's what is meant over here when it says that the mikveh has an inherent psul, and so too a Baal Mum has an inherent psul. Whether it's a Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza, his psul is a result of the behavior of others. And that's what the second half of Rabbi Akiva's statement is, that the Baal Mum is psulo begufo. Psulo begufo is something that's checkable. Just like by the mikveh, it's checkable when you measure it. And the fact that it's checkable gives extra nemanut to the Eid Echad. And that's why over here, by the Eid Echad, by the Baal Mum, we can check it. Now, this is where your point comes up, which is that there's a difference in the cases. By the Eid Echad, by the Baal Mum, that's something checkable. And we find him to be a Baal Mum. He was a Mum. The Mum was always there. It's not something that all of a sudden showed up. The Mum existed for a period of time. Because by the Mikveh, when the Eid comes and tells that it's Chaser, yes, it's psulo begufo, but that doesn't mean the mikveh was always chaser. The status of the mikveh could have changed over time. And therefore, these cases are not exactly alike. And that's why there is another point of deficit here in the comparison, because the mikveh that psulo begufo versus the psul begufo of the Baal Mum are slightly different, because the psul begufo by the Baal Mum is something that indicates to us that it's been around for a while. It's either congenital, or even if it wasn't congenital, it didn't happen yesterday. It's something that's been around. By the mikveh, could have been yesterday it was full, and today it's empty. I mean, that's evaporated. Somebody took water out of it. We have no idea, just because we know the psul begufo now, has any indication of what it meant beforehand. Now, there was an underlying assumption here that the Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza, when you find out that he is a Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza, everything he did until this point is Kshera, and only here to forward is it Sula. Where do you know that from? Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Amar Kra, Vaita Lo Ulezaro Acharav, that it will be for him and his children after him. This is in the Brit Kunat Olam that is given to Pinchas. Over there it says, Vaita lo ulezaro acharav, for him and his descendants after him. Ben zera kasher, ben zera pasul. Irrespective of whether he is a zera kasher or a zera pasul. As Rashi learns over here, that l'chatchila lo kamar. The pasuk is not saying that l'chatchila should do it. Da mechulal kariya rachmana. The Torah calls him a halal. He's a Kohen Chalal. Shinit Chalal Mikdushat Kohen. He does not have the Kedushah of a Kohen. So if he's coming to do Avodah, then clearly we're not going to let him do Avodah because he's Mechulal. But Bidiavad, if he did do Avodah, or he did the Avodah before we knew that he was a Kohen Chalal, that Avodah is not Mechulal. Because he is Mechulal, but not the Avodah. And therefore, the Avodah is Kshera. Tosafot raises a separate issue, which is that back in the early parts of the Masechta on Daf Dalet, we said the word zera implied zera kasher and not zera pasul. So how come over here all of a sudden the Gemara thinks that the word zera means zera kasher and zera pasul? Tosafot says, context, over here the word is completely extraneous, and since it's completely extraneous, it must be coming to teach you something beyond just zera kasher. It means zera kasher and pasul. Whereas the limud in the beginning of the Masechta wasn't dealing with a itura, an extraneous word, simply what is the meaning of the word zera? The word zera by itself would just mean zera kasher. Avuad Shmuel Amar Meocha. What Shmuel says, we learn it from here. Barech Hashem Chelo, Po Yadav Yirtzeh. Afilu Chulin Shebo Tirtzeh. Even things that are Chulin will be accepted. Chulin Shebo means Chalalim Shebo. Those that are profaned. Who are those that are profaned? Those are the Chalalim that came from Shevet Levi. And because of the nature of their parents' marriage, it makes them into Chilulin or Chalal. So that case is Barech Hashem Chelo. That Hashem will accept the work of his hands, even though he is chulin, even though he was mechulau. Rabbi Yane Amar Miocha. Rabbi Yane says from here, Ubata la Kohen asher yeh b'yamim ha'im. He will come up to the Kohen who is in that time. You think a person comes to inquire about an issue with a Kohen who's not during his time period? How exactly does he get to this Kohen if he's not at the time period? Ela zekasher v'nitchalau. This is speaking about someone who was kasher and then became nitchalal. So, despite the fact that he was nitchalal, he was still called a kohen until that point in time, bayamim aim, in those times. The Gemara in Rosh Hashanah and Sanhedrin darshins this to tell you that you gotta take whoever it is in your time. Riftach bidoro kishmuel bidoro. That even though you have different levels of leadership or different qualities of leadership, whoever is the leader at the time, whoever's the kohen at that time, that's who you have to go to. You can't try to go to Moshe Rabbeinu, he's not in your generation. Whoever is the leader in your generation, you go to, despite the fact that they're not on the level of those from the previous generations. So that's the way the Gemara Darshan said there. Over here, it's Darshaniyat, that, what does it mean? That you have a Kohen Shaloi Yabi Yamav? Means that, Zekasher v'nit Chalel. How do you become Ois Kohen during your time? Because he became known as a Chalal. He'd be found out as being a Grusha v'chalutza. That means until this point, he was your Kohen v'yamav. But now he goes to be Ois Kohen v'yamav. So how's that? That's the case here where he is found out to be a Gushan Chalutza. So until that point he was the Kohen of your Yamim, until after that, not. Baal Mum Dabarutab Sulaminalan. How do we know that the din is not true by a Baal Mum? Versus a Chalal where we're saying that the Avoda b'diavad is Kshera, or retroactively is Kshera. How do we know that by Baal Mum the din is not that way? Baal Mum Dabarutab Sulaminalan. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Amar Kra. Because it says by Pinchas, again, juxtaposed to the puzzle that we quoted before, it says, V'lo kashu chaser. Only when he is whole does he have the brit kuna. When he's not whole, he does not have the brit kuna. Meaning that a baal mum is not considered to be a kohen whatsoever. So what's seemingly the difference between a baal mum and the kohen chalal is that a kohen chalal is now chulin, but he was a kohen. That's why he's a kohen chalal. The kohen baal mum, because of his being chaser all along, and that is something that is in his goof, that is something that makes him ois kohen from day one, and therefore he is not kosher levoda, period. Right, so it's ironic that, right, what you're saying. A kohen chalal cannot have children that are kohenim. His children will be chalalim. On the other hand, the kohen baal mum has children, his children could be regular kohenim that could serve in the mikdash. So meaning that the kohen chalal is chulim. He's lost his shem kuna in the terms of the kedusha. And therefore the chilulin takes him away from being a kohen whatsoever. But that chilulin only comes up either the way that the Gemara learned before, at the point where we find out about it, or it does not ruin his avoda until that point because of these dispensations. On the other hand, a kohen baal mum is a kohen. He's just got a baal mum that stops him from doing avoda. So the baal mum is much more of a kohen. He's a kohen that just has a block or something that interferes with him doing the avoda. He's allowed to eat kodeshim, he's allowed to eat shuma. He can do anything besides the avoda in the mikdash. And therefore his children are going to be kohanim, despite that fact, any avoda he does is mechulal. So it's interesting, almost ironic, that the one who's more of a kohen, his avoda is not accepted. Whereas the one who's less of a kohen, his avoda, until we know about it, is accepted. Again, gzeret ha-katuv over here. Va'shalom k'tiv. Wait a minute, how can you darshin lechein anini noten lo et briti shalom to mean shalem? The pasuk says shalom. So Gemara says, I'm Rav Nachman, vav to shalom k'tiyahi. The vav of shalom over there is katua. What this means is subject to major controversy. And if you look in the Mishnah Tavram, he brings down 8 or 9 different opinions as to exactly what it looks like. I'm going to tell you the 3 main opinions that come up about this, and then I can send you the Makorah later. One opinion is that the Vav Aktiah here means a cut-off Vav. What's a cut-off Vav? A Yud. And that's how you read it, that there should be a Yud over here. That's brought down by many of the Rishonim, and also they have Drashot on the fact that it's a Yud there, from the Gematriot that add up with the Yud there, and they're using a Yud. And so they saw the Vav Aktiah as being a Yud, as reading Shalim, and really from the word Shalim. So that's one way to read the Vav Aktiah. The other view is that a vav k'tiyah over here means that it's a small vav. The equivalent to the aleph in Vayikra, where we make a small aleph. So it's basically taking the same vav that you'd write and just making it in a smaller font. So that's what a vav k'tiyah means over here. The Ritva rejects this, interesting enough, and he says, Nirib perusho shikarut bentayim. Says, I think it means that there's a cut in the middle. Dulo avalei lemeimar zeirtahi. If you really thought it meant a small vav, it should have been a vav ze'irta, not a vav kitiya that is cut off. It should have been called this vav small. The nafkamina, the Sefer Torah. Since I think the nafkamina is whether the Sefer Torah is kasher. And you have to go fix all our Sefer Torah where the vav is written in a regular manner. You need to go and fix all of those. You need to go and change all of those Sefer Torah. So it's clear here that the Ritva believes that it's me'akev, and he believes that the way to do it is this. He says you draw a vav, but you don't take the vav all the way down to the bottom. You leave a little gap in the vav and you continue it below. And truly, that is the practice of the Sofrim that I know of today. Their practice is to write a vav that if you didn't continue and finish the vav, it would be kasher. Because it's more than a yud and it's clearly a vav. It's just not as long as the other vavs that are there. Then you leave a little blank space and then you finish off the vav underneath it. And that's what a vav k'tiyah is that there's a line, there's a cut in the middle of the vav, and that's similarly what the Ritva is describing over here. So those are the 3 main shitot, that it's a yud, a small vav, or a cut vav. And again, the practice today, that is that we do a cut vav. Now, whether that's postal to Sefer Torah or not, Rabbi Kiva Eger has a huge Torah about this. Seemingly, it does not. Because of the plethora of opinions over here, it makes it that it's very hard to be machriya. And even if you are machriya, how are you certain that that's the right way? So to be posel a Sefer Torah because of it becomes much more difficult because of the number of opinions that there are. Meaning that there are opinions over here that instead of making the vav, the way that a vav looks like in our Sefer Torah, is that you turn the kumos as you come down with the vav, so it goes from being a thick down to a thinner line at the bottom. It comes to like a point at the bottom. So what it means here is vav k'tiyah means to cut off and make it a flat moshav, Which means that instead of turning the kumos, you keep the kumos flat, and it stays thick all the way down to the bottom, as if it's like a pillar that's standing on a box. Others say that's what a vav ketiyah is. So again, there are numerous and numerous opinions about what this vav ketiyah is. Over here, there is a drosha about it. Seemingly the Gemara is aware of this, and seems that the vav is different than the vav that is normal. And therefore, you have to say that there was a misora, that the vav itself has to be either small, or like a yud, or cut off in some way, changed in its way. Unfortunately, a lot of Sifrei Torah do not have this. And you read there, and there's a normal vav. And what's even more interesting is that the Teimani, Sifrei Torah, do not have anything different. They have a regular vav over there. The reason might be, which is because it depends on where you learn this from. Do we learn this out of Lachain, Emorinini, Tinlo, et Biti Shalom, Kshu Shalem, Elok Kshu Chaser? So that's one way to have this limud come out. Based on that limud, then the vav in there has to be a vav ktiar, a vav that doesn't look like a vav, so it's not shalom, but rather shalem or shalim. That would be the way to read it. But there is, in an alternate position, that the psul of Balmum comes from a different pasuk. If you bring the psul of Balmum from the other pasuk, or the alternate pasuk, then you don't have to necessarily hold by this Mesorah, because then you don't need it to read Shalem over here, it could read Shalom. The Rambam Paskin's not like this over here from this Pasuk, but the alternate Pasuk, and that might be what's driving the Teimanim, which the Teimanim have a Vav without any Ktiyah in it, because they follow the Rambam. And the Rambam himself, Paskin's not like this Gemara of Lachin, Anini Ten El Briti Shalom, but rather from the Pasuk, Achala Parochet Lo Yavo, Velo Yechalel Et Migdashi, that he can't come. The Baal Mum is not allowed to come to the parochet. We learned this in Pashat Emor. And if he does come to it, below Yochalelet Kodeshi, so he does not profane my Kodeshim. Meaning that if he does go, he is profaning the Kodeshim, and that's why it doesn't work. So if you use that alternative source, then you don't need the Vav Ktia, and that might actually, the two might be connected. Maybe the Mesorah about it being a Ktia is only if you learn it from Shalom. If you don't learn it from Shalom, you don't need a Vav Ktia. If you correlate or connect those two, that would explain why the Rambam doesn't pass him like this, doesn't also, according to Teimanim, have a Vav Ktiyah in their Mesorah of their Sefer Torah. Again, it seems to be that the Mesorah here was wide and varied about what they do with this Vav. Okay, we'll start this Mishnah, and then we'll continue with the Gemara tomorrow. The Mishnah says, Kol makom sheyesh kiddushin ve'en avera, any case where there can be kiddushin, and there is no avera. I mean, this is a proper marriage, a wholesome, good marriage. Havlad olei chakar zachar. In that case, the yichus, or the standing of the children, is determined by the father. Over here, which is Yichus, comes from the patrilineal side. What are examples of this? Zo Kohenet Leviyah B'Yisraelit. These are women, whether they are Bat Kohen, Bat Leviyah, or Bat Yisrael. Shenasu the Kohen Levi Yisrael. And they got married to Kohen Levi Yisrael. All these are proper marriages. Then the Zera is determined by the Kohen Levi Yisrael. Whatever the father is, that's what the children are. V'chol makom sheish kiddushin v'yesh aveira. In cases where the Kiddushin is chal, meaning that the Kiddushin is tofes, but there is an aveira in that Kiddushin, Havlad olei chachara pagum. The Vlad goes after the one who is problematic in this case. So, again, this is a case where you have an aveira. This is an illicit marriage, but the Kiddushin are tofsin, generally that's by chiyuve lavin. When you have a lav that says, do not do this, the Kiddushin are tofsin, and there's still a problem because somebody is pagum here. That gima gets passed down to the child. Bezuzo, what are examples of this? Zu almanah lekohen gadol. That's an almanah, a widow that marries a kohen gadol. Grusha v'chalutza lekohen ejot. A divorcee that marries a kohen. Mamzeret v'nitina l'Yisrael. Again, mamzeret v'nitina l'Yisrael. Bat Yisrael mamzeret l'natin. A nitina is someone from the nation of the nitinim, which the Gemara or most Rishonim identify with the givonim. That's Shua, they came and made the brit. They're put in as water carriers and wood choppers. Later on, David HaMelech is posel them and says that they can't marry into the kahal. So those are the netinim. But, so they have a status like, mamzerim. In each of these cases, whoever is the pagum, the problematic one here, they determine the outcome of the zera. So by the case of mamzer, or mamzeret, or natin and netina, if they marry someone else who they shouldn't marry, like a mamzeret marries Yisrael, which is an illegal marriage, but it's an Yisrael lab. Over there, the Zera will be a Mamzer because his mother is a Mamzeret. Same is true in reverse. If it's a Mamzer marrying an Israelite, the child is a Mamzer because the Pagum is the Mamzer. In the case of the Kohen to the grusha v'chalutza and the kohen gadol to almanah, in that case, the kohen himself does not change his status. As long as he's married to this woman, he's precluded from doing avoda. But if he divorces the woman, he goes back to being a regular kohen. The woman herself is made into a psula de kuhuna, a chalala from this, and her children will be chalalim. Because since she's the chalal, she will determine the fact that the children are after the pasul, and so too, over the case by the kohen, the kohen gadol. Again, as long as they're married to them, they are problematic. They divorce them, the kohen remains b'kdushato. The woman is now a chalala, psula de kuhuna, and then a child born to her will go after her soul, which is that she is a chalala. Any case where you don't have kiddushin, doesn't work at all. I mean, there's no kiddushin at all. But they're able to generate kiddushin with other parties. So most of these are rayot. A person cannot marry their relatives, but those relatives can marry other people. I mean, that they are able to create kiddushin, they're able to get married. The only problem is that these two individuals, because of their closeness of kin, cannot marry each other. Those cases of Vlad Mamzer. The production from that is a Mamzer. What's an example of this? That's someone who is in violation of the Isur Arayot in the Torah. The child that's born of that Isur Arayot is a Mamzer. From Tir, the Tosva proves that our mission is following the Shita of Rabbi Shimon HaTemani and not Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva believes that Chiyuvei Lavin, also there, the Kedushin are not Tovsin. And therefore, the example in the previous part of the Mishnah wouldn't have worked. And also over here, it would have included those items as well. The fact that it's not that way shows that the Loch is like Shimon HaTemani, that you only produce Mamzerim from Chiyuvei to Kretot and Chiyuvei Mitat Beitin. So those two items create a Mamzer, and includes both Chiyuvei Mitot Beitin as well as Chiyuvei Kretot, and not just Chiyuvei Mitot Beitin. Chiyuvei Kretot are also included over here. V'chol, Shimish en la elav, v'lo al achirim kiddushin. Someone where you can't marry them, but your marriage to them is not just because of you, but anybody else would have that same restriction. In that case, avlad kimota. Then it goes after matrilineal descent. Bezuzeh, what's an example of this? Zeh avlad shivcha ben achrit. This is a case where Yisrael marries a non-Jewish woman or marries a shivcha kananit. In that instance, the child is not Jewish because we're after the mother. The mother, who is a nachrit, cannot marry this Jew or cannot marry any Jew whatsoever. She doesn't have kiddushin at all. So you have kiddushin at all, we go after matrilineal descent, the child is non-Jewish. And in reverse, if it's a goy with the Israelite, again, the goy has no way to create kiddushin, not with her and not with anybody else in Israel. Therefore, it's governed by this law, which is matrilineal descent, and the child is a child of Israelite, and therefore the child is a Jewish child. The Amorim argue about what the status of this child that is born through matrilineal descent, which is a non-Jewish father and a Jewish mother. In all likelihood, he is Jewish. Question is, he a Jew that is pagum? Or is he a Jew through and through, and there's no question about him? So that question comes up. It's a machloket in the Amoraim. In general, we paskin that he is a full-fledged Jew, and he can marry him whomever he wants or whomever he pleases amongst those Jews in Israel. Obviously, there is some sort of baggage that comes with the fact that his father was not Jewish. Okay, we're going to stop here by the Gemara on the bottom of Samach Vav Amud Bet.